time, we're going to, we'll call this meeting to order, even though it's not a quorum-related meeting, but welcome, everybody. Thank you for coming back for day two. One quick schedule update. I think there's, if you've gotten the updated interview schedule, we had one candidate withdraw, and then we moved one earlier, so the last interview today is at 3, and we will be done, or excuse me, at 2, and we'll be done at 3. So today will be a little bit of a shorter day. Tomorrow, again, ends at 5, and then Thursday ends at 1. So we have our first candidate here today, Ms. Abramson. Thank you very much for coming, being the early person today. And I think we've explained a little bit about the process here. We'll turn it back to you for opening comment, 5 minutes or so, just on why you're interested in this role, and then we'll open it for questions from the council. And then we'll, if we have time at the end, we'll turn it back to you for closing comments, all to be not more than 45 minutes, ideally. So. Welcome. Thank you for your interest, and I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you, and I assume this is on, right? Well, so you guys have been here for one day. You've got a few more, and thanks for the process. It's quite the process. So thank you for considering me also for Regent of the University of Minnesota, my alma mater for 2 degrees and my first employer out of college. I grew up in a very small town in northern Minnesota, Sandstone. If you blink when you go by it on 35W, you miss it. It's just north of Hinckley. And as somebody said earlier, it's where the Sandstone Prison is. And actually, I don't know if you know this, but 1,500 is the population of Sandstone. 500 are inmates. That's how they count the population of inmates, right in the constituency. So anyway, there were 52 people in my graduating class. Only 8 of us went off to college. I myself had limited opportunities, and so the university opened a window of opportunity for me. I, with the help of scholarships, working 2 jobs, and concentrating hard on school, I was able to finish in under 4 years with my summa and my Phi Beta Kappa. And I did it in under 4 years to save money. So I know how important it is to keep tuition costs low, because I was one of those kids. As a young department head at University Hospital, the CEO encouraged me to apply to the grad program in hospital administration. And my class was one of the first classes with women. The great gift of this graduate program was that it taught me problem-solving analysis and to think strategically and on my feet. So let's hope those skills are with me today. My career in healthcare has been very satisfying, and access to care a driving force. I picked out a few highlights merely because they're pertinent to the position we're discussing today. I worked at Hennepin County Medical Center 2 different times during my career, once earlier to help create a practice plan for the faculty, Hennepin Faculty Associates, which I then helped to launch. Later, I came back as Chief Operations Officer and led the effort to redesign the public institution through governance change to become Hennepin Healthcare System, which is how it's operating today. I was asked to serve as CEO and recruited the first operating board and led the strategic and master facility planning that followed. I also had an opportunity during my career to lead an organization called the Neighborhood Healthcare Network, a consortium of community clinics, including Community University Healthcare Center, through an advocacy effort to organize their trade association to be able to attract managed care contracts and not be locked out of the market. If you know anything about these clinics, you know that they've got a very diverse patient base, and it was very important to make sure that they could actually get those contracts. I also worked at Fairview University and was on the initial University-Fairview merger while I was an executive at Fairview for over 8 years. My governance experience is pretty broad, from supporting volunteer organizations in my early career to my study of governance models for the looming changes at Hennepin County Medical Center. I've seen quite a few sets of bylaws, and they don't get any more interesting by the number. I've just finished a 2-year stint as board chair of the National Marrow Donor Program, a $400+ million organization whose mission is to provide cell therapy to save lives. You may know it as the Be the Match Registry. Interestingly, the first bone marrow transplant was actually performed by Dr. Robert Good at our own University Hospital some 50 or so years ago. This is a national board, and I'm the only Minnesota person. During my stint as CEO, we recruited, as board chair, we recruited a new CEO. And we've just completed a very exciting strategic plan. I continue to serve. I'm past board chair right now and chair the comp committee for that board. So why am I interested in doing this now? I take great pride in Minnesota and the U. I recognize the importance of the U in my own history and to the state. I'm no longer building a career, a resume. I'm giving back and have been doing so for the last several years. I'm a tested leader with some challenges met over a long career. My expertise in healthcare would be a benefit to the region's governance, especially now. My academic health center, the academic health center at the U, is a large part of the institution. And given that healthcare professionals who train in Minnesota are more likely to stay there, it's a benefit to all of us to keep us strong. My executive experience in roles demanding efficiencies and keeping costs down is clearly helpful to a school trying to rein in administrative costs. My governance experience is relevant to the U of M regent position, especially my experience as both a board chair and a CEO, and I clearly understand the different roles that they play in governance. Finally, I'm excited about helping to support the arrival of a new university president, and totally ecstatic that it's a woman. I have a proven track record in the governing body's role in strategic planning and would love to be on board for an opportunity to look at the organization to help find its future path. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. I will start with the first question, which has to do with the university's land grant mission. The University of Minnesota is obviously our state's land-grant university. What does that mean to you, and what do you think it should mean to the people of Minnesota?
Well, what it means to me, and I remember having to use this phrase often in my early career working for the university, education, service, and research. Clear and simple, you use those phrases over and over. I think what it means to me is that the role of a land-grant institution is clearly to pursue the education of its people and to make sure that that is spread far and wide. I'm a firm believer in research, both basic and applied, and recognize the import to the state. And service really pulls it all together. You can do the two, but if you don't serve the state, what's the point? So that outreach mission clearly goes to those other two.
Thank you. And I think Councilmember Carlson has a question.
Yeah. The chair of the Board of Regents met with us, and what we wanted David McMillan to share with us, what was needed on the board as it went forward. And he actually addressed the medical school and said that it was under a new agreement and that if issues came up in the future, that the new president and vice president Tolar could handle them. Saying, but not saying in so many words, that the need for someone with health and medical background might be less necessary on the board today than it was yesterday. How do you respond to that assumption?
Well, my guess is that it's going to be a bigger deal to make sure that those new agreements work than anybody might think right now. My own experience, having worked the first merger, is that there are huge differences between Fairview and the university. And have any of you heard the phrase coined by the management guru, Peter Drucker, which is, culture eats strategy for lunch? Guess what? There's huge cultural differences. So those aren't easily corrected with an agreement. I'm sure that in the years since I was around that, I'm sure that they've made huge progress. But let's face it, education and healthcare are our two biggest societal issues. You know, I mean, we all count on them. Some people say that each of them have a lot of room for improvement. I think because the Academic Health Center and its role within the state to educate our future health people is so important that we can't leave that unattended. I think it would be a good idea to have a region that has more than a passing understanding, but deep expertise in healthcare, period.
Councilmember Rogers.
I got to say, I would agree entirely you need somebody. I'm a physician, a graduate of medical school, and I want to tag on to what some things Margaret mentioned, as far as especially the fact that the medical school produces 80% of the practicing physicians in this state. It's a major part of the university budget, and yet the standing of the medical school over the last 20 years has tended to be decreased, at least depending on which publications that you want to read. And I'd be interested in your comments on how do you overcome or improve the standing, and also, as you mentioned, put together those two different systems and to continue to improve an academic health center.
It's a very good question, so thank you, Dr. Rogers, for it, because I do have some opinions on that. I remember that one of the reasons for the initial merger was to make sure that what Fairview could bring to the university would help the state, meaning help relative to research and education, et cetera, et cetera. So the notion was that it would strengthen, and I have been disturbed to see that those numbers, in terms of research dollars in, have not necessarily kept pace with what our expectations would have been. That bothers me, and that goes back to the whole relationship has got to be strong enough so that people can have that kind of a healthy dialogue about why not and what do we need, because that in and of itself is a black eye for the state. We shouldn't be having those dollars go down. That has to be strengthened. So back to that whole notion of we can't just have certain people dealing with that. I think it has to be on the radar of the regents. Now, clearly, the regents don't run the place. They don't run the Academic Health Center. But I think we need to have people that can ask some of those tough questions. So.
Can I just add one other thing? The other comment I'll make, we had one of the regents mention that the agreement would be a new model for medical education, the agreement between Fairview and the university. Right. Your opinion, or I'm still not understanding how that is a new model, or if it really will become a nationwide model for medical education.
You know, Dr. Rush, I'm not privy to the deal points at all of this new agreement. What I would guess, and you were a student there, so you know that there's graduate medical education a heavy burden of the graduate medical education is at Hennepin. They are a major affiliate. There's barely a medical student in the state that hasn't spent some time at Hennepin County Medical Center, which is great. It's open doors, good place to learn. But I think the new model has to be something that would, I would say, include more medical centers, maybe more opportunities elsewhere. But I don't know what those deal points are. And that gets back to my point that, you know, it's too important to not understand that. And I would say that the execution of any new agreement relative to something changing around the new model of education is every bit a region's issue.
Thank you.
Councilmember Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, candidate. Having spent 5 years on this board, I'm always reluctant to disagree with my council member Carlson, but I didn't have that impression from the chair's guidance to us. I know from talking to other regions that they think it is very and a continuing importance, and I didn't get the same impression that DeMarget did from Chairman Miller's comments. So I think that is important, and let me just ask a couple things. You have to have a program to follow this in and out. So you talked about work on the initial merger of the Fairview and the University. When was that?
Oh, that was a long time ago. That's why I'm sure that they've made great progress on the cultural. It was 20 years ago.
Sure. And then that fell apart, right? Then Fairview was spun off. Is that correct? And then now this is a rejoining. Is that a fair statement of what's happened here?
Yes.
Margaret?
Yes.
All right. So they come back together. This is almost deja vu. Maybe not so much.
In fear of correcting you, I'm going to say that my understanding is that it's not really ever fallen apart.
Okay.
I think that it has not lived up to the expectations. So you've got a healthcare system like Fairview that's got several hospitals and is strong economically, and you have the University Hospital that was having some trouble economically. They come together. What does the university need? It needs patients, and it needs probably some of that fiscal infusion. So what Fairview needed was, that tertiary level of care, and it had the patients. But their expectation was that the halo effect would work for the whole system. So that was really the whole point of it. I would say that, again, back to that, Fairview's culture was quite different than the university's. So execution of that takes leadership par excellence and time. So that cultural shift had to change, et cetera, et cetera. There have been huge, I would say, efficiencies because of the systems coming together. I think there have been improvements in patient care. I, as Dr. Rogers, don't necessarily know, because I wasn't privy to this part of it, how much the model of medical education has changed, whether that has enriched the graduate programs, whether that has been really good for the Fairview system. I do know that the Fairview system has had more occasion to have fellows and residents here and there. So, but I would say if indeed the university's mission of being an excellent research and academic institution for medical is still not where we would like it to be, then something hasn't necessarily come to fruition. So I wouldn't say it's failed. I would say this is a reset button. And I think, from what I know, and again, I'm not privy to the deal points, I would guess that there's been real, hopefully meaningful conversation about the passing back and forth of resources and for what. So that it's got to be an even-handed, meaningful transaction for both parties. That's the only way this is going to really work. And it should be good for the state of Minnesota. So I wouldn't say, I think it's just in progress. It is in progress, and that's one of the reasons that I think it needs to be on the radar screen. I think Regent McMillan probably knows that. I think he's had some experience as a hospital board member himself. And I appreciate that and don't want to diminish that in any way. I grew up in healthcare. I know everything from being a supervisor to a director to a VP to, doing it all. So I think by osmosis I probably have something to add. But I don't know this. I don't know the deal points. I just also know what Dr. Rogers pointed out. I'm not as happy with those numbers with research dollars coming in. I want a higher standing, and I think we can get there.
Okay. Councilmember Menon.
Thank you for being here today. Crisis management is a really key aspect to the function of the Board of Regents and what you'll be taking on. So I just want to know a little bit about how you view the most important and crucial aspects of crisis management and how that relates to managing that as a member of a collective.
Okay. Thank you for the question. 9/11, bridge collapse. These are things that I have led through. So crisis management to me is if you you have a plan before you have the crisis. So one of the things that the 9/11 situation taught many of us in leadership positions in large organizations was that you had to get a command structure that was pretty strong with decisions made in advance about who is doing what, and even more important than who is doing what, who is speaking for whom. And so I know this stuff like the back of my hand, and would expect that the Regents has, the university has, a crisis management plan. I think in times of crisis, when leaders are looked to for calm, that it's more important than ever to make sure that people are not doing end runs, that, you know, messages are consistent, timely, constructive. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you.
Councilmember Hipsch.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for joining us today. We spent a lot of time this morning talking specifically about healthcare and in the health focus area, but the university does things much broader than healthcare. Talk to us a little bit about what some of your priorities would be on the Board of Regents beyond healthcare.
Thank you for that question, because while I think it's important that a board like the Regents is composed of people that have expertise, I also think it's extremely important to broaden the horizons of the Regents and the people that serve on it by having new experiences for them. So I think in my opening I mentioned that I'm concerned about tuition. I want to make sure that we keep that in line and that we don't turn down some of the very gifted students that we have. Governor Walz yesterday talked about Minnesota being the education state. I'd love to see what that means and work with the state legislators, et cetera, to figure out what does that actually mean relative to the university. My own interests have been way beyond healthcare. That's been my vocation, but not necessarily where I spent all of my time. Of late, I've had to learn the publishing industry, and so I'm very interested in that. I also took a whole course of study in American studies. So I consider myself a lifelong learner and believe in the College of Liberal Arts relative to broadening people. I live six blocks from the St. Paul campus and spend some time there. But my priorities would basically be, at any time you're recruiting a board member, in my mind, and what I've done when I've looked for board members is to make sure they can bring something, but they're also stretched a little. And let me tell you that I get real excited about things that can drive my intellectual curiosity. So I fully expect that while I might bring strategic planning, healthcare expertise, and governance, there's going to be I don't know much about sports. I'm a Gopher football fan. I go. And but you know, I don't know much about some of those things. So that would be what would keep me intellectually curious and interested. So back to my priorities. Clearly, the Academic Health Center, making sure that we can strengthen it. Keeping tuition low. I can get right on that activity relative to finding efficiencies and keeping admin costs down. That's just a business requirement for any organization. The other thing is that I would really like to see, in some of the reading that I've done in the last month, I'd like to see a strategic planning process that would go into the core root thing here is that the university has several campuses. It's got a lot of core businesses out there. I'd like to see how we could, in a strategic planning process, make sure we're getting the best of those, but the whole works well. So that might be a pipe dream, but that would be what I would like to work toward.
Thank you. Vice Chair Taylor.
Thank you, Dan. Tell us a little bit about the HCMC2, I can't remember the new name.
HHS.
HHS, in the transition and the important role that it's now becoming a public benefit corporation. And beyond that, how does it relate to what you might have an opportunity to do as a University of Minnesota Regent?
Thank you for the question. The I think in my opening I commented that I went back to Pentagon to take on the chief operations officer job. It wasn't to lead a governance change. It was to try to improve the operation. However, what was happening was that the county was rightfully concerned about an unlimited need for tax levy. We all understand this. And so they wanted to be able to put a lid on it, and they also wanted to make sure that the hospital and the clinics were operating as efficiently as they could, so that when they did have to put tax levy in, they understood it better. So there was huge pressure to make sure that we were operating as other healthcare institutions did, and not leaving money on the table, simply put. So that pressure created some new thinking about how to govern the place. And it became evident that perhaps the commissioners and wonderful people, they've got a huge county to run. The hospital was kind of a city of its own. And it was difficult for any of them to become expert in its operation. So there was some traction gained around bringing people in for an operating board that could be closer to the action with some of that expertise. So that's the reason that we did it. So I had a couple of years as chief operations officer before we even got into that, merely because we were trying to find those efficiencies. As we did that, and it became evident that we needed that public benefit corporation and change governance, then there was huge infrastructure changes to make in order to get to some of those efficiencies. So that in and of itself is applicable to, my themes here are close to the action and efficiencies and operating as with a governance body that is, how can I say this, additive and close and supportive. So I think all of those things are applicable. I think that, and it's not a pejorative statement to say that's not happening at the U by any means, but I do think that the regions are created in order to be close to the action of the university. Otherwise, the state could run it, right? So the regents, therefore, have that obligation, and it should be a board made up of people that have expertise to offer. So I think that's directly applicable. Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a workforce question, and it's related to, again, the medical field, but it could be any field. For 3 years, I co-chaired the Healthcare Workforce Commission in the state, and through our work, we found that we have a deficiency in family physicians, general practice physicians, and also in psychiatry. And so the legislature stepped up, and we are actually paying for additional residency slots to bring more physician training opportunities for people in those areas, so we targeted that. And also some loan forgiveness if people are willing to go to underserved areas. My question is, what do you see as the role of the Board of Regents in fulfilling workforce needs in our state?
Good question. Thank you for it. I think that, do we still do the rural, I can't remember the name of it, the rural?
Rural Physicians Program.
Duluth does. Duluth.
Duluth does, right. Yeah. And Rochester most clearly, they've got a lot of health professionals that we're graduating there as well, correct? Mm-hmm. So we're a supplier. One of the root causes, and Dr. Rogers will know this, is that family physicians and psychiatrists do not make as much money as some of the highly paid specialties. So you have to really be thinking about how do you solve that particular problem. And loan forgiveness is clearly a way to do that. Making more more livable lifestyles for those folks is also another way. I know that at Hennepin, we ended up adding beds in psychiatry because there seemed to be a dearth. And it's a loss leader for any hospital, so it was a tough decision to make. But adding those beds meant that we also had to be thinking about our supply of psychiatrists, and extenders became something that we did. We also have, at Hennepin, we added a workforce element that would help with the non-psychiatric issues for those patients while we were in an inpatient bed. So I would say that you have to be thinking about how to improve, how to expand how many go in, and that's a matter of loan forgiveness and making it very, very appealing. You're competing against the physicians who, you know, have huge debt. And so when you get out of medical school and you're looking at that debt, a radiology fellowship or a residency doesn't look too bad. So that's the issue, and it's going to be resources that will make the difference, I believe.
Just a follow-up. As a member of the Board of Regents, potentially, what do you see as the board's responsibility in meeting the workforce needs?
I think that back to the mission, we're supposed to educate, provide service. It seems to me that's a service issue. And since we do run one large campus in the Twin Cities, as well as Rochester, for the purpose of graduating healthcare folks, that we kind of own it. We need to participate in it. I don't have the answers as to the how yet, but clearly I think that it is an upper level issue as opposed to a lower level issue.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Ms. Abramson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for being here. Good to see you again. Just in general, or however specific you'd like to go, what do you see as the role and the relationship between the legislature and the University of Minnesota?
That's a good question. I haven't been in this building since the remodeling, and I was over at the Senate office building the other day, and it's beautiful. I haven't been to the Capitol since it's been remodeled. I've spent a fair amount of time here, either testifying or meeting with legislators, and I have always prided myself with having good relationships, but I haven't needed them continually, you know, and I haven't been in a job where I've needed that for quite some time. The university is a totally different animal. There's funding sources that need to be understood, that need to be supported and discussed at all of these, in all of these chambers. So I think that depending upon government, I don't know what the government relations kind of staff looks like. I don't know whether the legislature expects to have the president over here, how they want to see Regents, how the Regents has organized to maximize their influence without looking like they're scattered around. I don't know any of that, so I'm just remember that. But I do think that, again, the Regents are responsible for making the university, keeping it strong and making it stronger. You can't do that without the state of Minnesota understanding your role and program. That takes discussion. That takes relationship building. I'm totally happy to do that, but I don't know what the program would need to look like. So, does that help?
Councilmember Hipsch.
Thank you. In the state of Minnesota, we have two major public higher education systems, in the University of Minnesota and the Minnesota State System. Talk a little bit about how you might work to partner between those two systems if you were a region, to kind of set a vision for what higher ed needs to be in Minnesota.
Thank you for the question. Is it acceptable to say, I have no idea? but I really look forward to learning about it. Honest to goodness, I don't know that much about the state system. I would be intrigued to learn a little bit more about it, how it needs to be, how we as Minnesotans can make sure that we leverage both systems, whether they need to compete, whether they need to partner up. I don't know, but that would be just exciting for me.
Councilmember Carlson.
You're the only one in our pool that's been a CEO of an organization with an enormous budget. You've also been a board chair. I believe you said the bone marrow was $400 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
When you first sat down with President Gabel, mm-hmm. and she said to you, we have a lot in common, mm-hmm. what advice do you have for me? What would you say to her?
Wow, that's a good question.
Darn it.
A little pressure here.
No,
no, but it's a wonderful question. First of all, let me just say that I happened to be able to be at the Regents meeting when they confirmed her, and I was so excited. It's a red letter day for the university. She's got all the tickets. She seems young, energetic, and I think she's going to just do a great job. She will do a great job because she's got a governing body of faculty and staff at all of these institutions wanting her to succeed. And therefore, my advice to her will be to take some time to get to know the organization. In hospital circles, we always kid about when a new hospital administrator is named, the first thing they do is paint the lobby. Okay? So, to make their mark. So, I guess my cute advice would be, to, you know, when you paint the lobby, make sure you check in with the Regents about what color. In other words, she is the chief executive officer. The governance board can act as a partner. The first job is going to be to make sure that she is onboarded carefully and respectfully, and that there would be a common vocabulary that you could get. So I think the Regents have to have her back. They also have to challenge her and not be intimidated by doing that. To me, that's the, you know, that's the CEO governance role.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Madsen.
So we're going to be voting on Friday to move people forward, and if you're selected, I don't know if anybody's spoken to you about the next step, but it involves talking to 201 legislators to get their support so that you get voted in or elected to then become a regent. Are you prepared to do that? Do you have a network set up? Have you thought through that part of the process?
I am ready. I mean, I have this. I have copied out the whole list of who. I have emails ready to go. I expect and have cleared my calendar, except for a couple of these board meetings that I've got to keep going to do this. This is the emphasis in my life for the next month or two or however long it takes. I would hate to, you know, it took me a while to decide, is this something I want to do now? I decided I wanted to do it now. If I want to do it now, I'm going to do it the right way. And hopefully solicit support of those people that are in the process. So I plan to do what it takes. Thank you.
All right, that brings us to the end of our time. I'll, if you have any closing thoughts or comments for us.
I do. Thank you. The one thing that didn't come up, and I wanted to be able to express it, is that, you know, I've had some experience with students. I have not necessarily stood up and given lectures, but during my career, I often had a group of students that would come to whichever institution I was at because I was an alum. I would host problem-solving cases, and so that meant that I would let these students loose in whichever organization I was in and give them a problem to solve and have them present it. So I've enjoyed that. I've also mentored a whole bunch of young professionals as well as students. So I very much look forward to trying to get involved in understanding how that would all work here as a regent. So I just wanted you to know that. But in closing, I guess I would just say I think my expertise in healthcare is just a starting point for what I can bring. I happen to know a lot about that. I would hope that that could be leveraged. It's not all I bring. I've got, general strategic planning governance experience and executive experience that I would love to use. I'm very excited about the future and really want to be here when Joan Gable is known as a wonderful university president and not a wonderful university woman president, right? So, thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time and your interest.